Well, good morning. If you want to go ahead and open your Bibles up to Numbers chapter 20. We'll be in Numbers 20 in just a minute here. Before we get started, I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank everyone here who've been so helpful. And Rhiannon and I, we appreciate every one of you here. And especially thank the elders and Jeff, David, and Randy, and all the help that you've given me. And this has just been a great opportunity for growth, and I pray that all of you here will continue to grow and do good work while Rhiannon and I go off our way. So now before we get into the text here in Numbers 20, I want to take a second to consider the larger picture, the bigger context of where we are here in the Bible. So in Exodus, Moses, by God's power, he led the people of Israel out of slavery in Egypt, where they'd been for a long time. And of course, there were the 10 plagues that God sent. And Pharaoh, eventually by the 10th plague, he allowed the people to go, except for he sent his army after them into the wilderness. And so then Moses, again, by God's power, he separated the Red Sea, and the people of Israel went through on dry ground. And then the Egyptians, when they tried to follow after them, were drowned. And so here the Israelites are out of Egypt. They're finally free from bondage. And Moses begins to lead them through the wilderness. And he leads them through the wilderness for months, for a long time. And then eventually they get to the promised land, the land of Canaan, that God said he would give to them. But then when Moses sends in 12 of the leaders to spy out the land like God told him to, they're unfaithful. And the people follow those 10 spies who bring back a bad report. And so instead of entering the land, they have to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. And that's where we are here in Numbers 20. We're in this period of 40 years wandering in the wilderness. And so with that larger context in mind, let's go ahead and read Numbers 20, the first 13 verses, if you want to follow along. Then the sons of Israel, the whole congregation, came to the wilderness of Zin in the first month, and the people stayed at Kadesh. Now Miriam died there and was buried there. And keep in mind, Miriam is Moses' sister. Going on in verse 2, there was no water for the congregation, and they assembled themselves against Moses and Aaron. The people thus contended with Moses and spoke, saying, "If only we had perished when our brothers perished before the Lord. Why then have you brought the Lord's assembly into this wilderness for us and our beasts to die here? Why have you made us come up from Egypt to bring us into this wretched place? It is not a place of grain or figs or vines or pomegranates, nor is there water to drink." And unfortunately, this is an all too familiar type of complaint from the people of Israel. As Jeff brought up in his sermon earlier in Exodus 16, the people are making the same kind of complaint there. And so this is the same thing that we see from these people over and over. And here they are again, complaining to Moses about the lack of water this time. Going on, look how Moses and Aaron react. Then Moses and Aaron came in from the presence of the assembly to the doorway of the tent of meeting and fell on their faces. They're just overwhelmed. They don't know what to do. But then going on, the glory of the Lord appeared to them. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Take the rod, and you and your brother Aaron assemble the congregation and speak to the rock before their eyes, that it may yield its water. You shall thus bring forth water for them out of the rock, and let the congregation and their beasts drink." So Moses took the rod from before the Lord, just as he had commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly before the rock, and he said to them, "Listen now, you rebels." Then Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came forth abundantly. And the congregation and their beasts drank. But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Because you have not believed me to treat me as holy in the sight of the sons of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them." And those were the waters of Meribah, because the sons of Israel contended with the Lord, and he proved himself holy among them. So the first thing that I want us to see very clearly here in Numbers chapter 20 is that God takes obedience seriously. God takes obedience seriously, and he expected Moses to obey him exactly as he commanded. He told Moses, of course, to speak to the rock so that water would come out. But Moses struck it, and not only did he strike it once, he struck it twice. And this was such a simple and clear command, yet Moses failed to obey. He disobeyed. And God was not pleased. He may have still allowed water to come out, but he was not pleased. And so already what we need to see from this is that we need to obey God carefully and exactly as he commands. We also have commands from God, and some of them are very simple and clear, just like Moses being told to speak to the rock. One example of a simple and clear command that we have is baptism. In Matthew 28, 18 through 20, Jesus is talking to his disciples before he ascends, and he tells them to go out into the world, and one of the things that he tells them to do is to baptize people in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. It's very plain and easy to understand. And then we see that being carried out in passages like Acts 2, 38. The people at Pentecost, they recognize their sin, and they ask, what should we do? And so Peter's response to them is, repent and be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins. It's very simple, very clear. Yet I've heard people say that baptism doesn't really matter. We don't have to be baptized to be saved because God can save us either way. But God specifically tells us to be baptized. We can't just disregard his commandment. Whether we just don't understand it or just don't feel like doing it, there's no excuse. And whatever the command might be, whether it's baptism or something else entirely different, we have to be careful to do exactly what God says no matter what. And now the second thing that I want us to see here in Numbers 20 is that God still expected Moses to obey, even though Moses was stressed. Pay attention here. Moses would have had to have been incredibly stressed. I can't imagine how stressed he would have been. In verse 1, his sister Miriam had just died. And so I'm sure he would have been wanting to mourn the loss of his sister. But it doesn't seem like he got much of a chance to do that, because he stuck leading this nation of complainers. And then to make matters worse, there's no water. And then just to add on top of that, they all complained to him about it, just like they always did. And remember, Moses has been leading these people for quite some time, and this isn't the first time that something exactly like this has happened. And now, with the death of his sister and no water and all of this just piling up on him, he had to have been so stressed. And we can see that he was in verse 6, whenever Moses and Aaron fall on their faces. They're visibly overwhelmed. But the thing is, even though it seems like Moses could have maybe come up with excuses here, that's not what we see. What we see is that when it came down to it, all that mattered was that he disobeyed. All that mattered was that he did not obey God carefully. And what we need to see for ourselves is that we also have to obey God when we're stressed. One time when I was at Florida College, I had 3 tests in one day. In my opinion, that's not fair, and it shouldn't happen like that, but it did. And I had to deal with it. And even one test, that's a little bit stressful. It takes study and preparation so that I can get ready for it. And I want to do well on these tests. And then to have 3 of them at the same time, that's 3 times the study and preparation. And then when the day comes, I had to keep all 3 of these subjects on my mind at the same time. And then just to add to that, they're all mentally tiring. And so by the time I got to the 3rd one, I was just about worn out, but I still had to take another. And by the time I finished that one, I'll be honest, my brain sort of felt like a potato. But it didn't matter that I was stressed in the sense that God still expected me to obey. It wouldn't have been okay for me to just cheat or commit some sin like that to make things easier on myself, to take some of that stress off. And cheating, really, if we're calling it what it is, it's just another form of lying. It's taking someone else's answers, putting it down on that test as if they're ours. And so if I would have done that, it would be lying because there's an assumption that those answers are mine and mine only. And if we look at Proverbs chapter 6, verse 16, it's very clear how God feels about lying. Six things the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to him, and two of those involve lying. And so no matter how stressed I was about these three tests, and I was stressed, God still expected me to obey. And by the way, so did Florida College, and there would have been immediate consequences right there if I would have cheated on that test. Or maybe we find ourselves in a stressful financial situation. Maybe we don't see how we're going to make the bill payment or something like that. And maybe we really aren't going to make the bill payment the way things are playing out. But even then, that doesn't give us an excuse to steal or commit tax fraud. Maybe change a few numbers around here and there to make things work out for us. There's no excuse for that. No matter how stressed we might be in a type of situation like that, God expects our obedience. Sin is never acceptable. Or maybe we feel pressure from an employer to step things up at work. Maybe they aren't satisfied with our current effort, but we don't feel like we have the time or the energy to increase that effort. Or maybe we're just too lazy, but whatever the case is, we can't just lie on a report or make things look better than they are, make it look like we're putting forth more effort than we are or getting more done than we are. First of all, that's probably going to be found out pretty quick. But regardless, it's not okay. It's not acceptable to God. He always expects our obedience, no matter how stressed we might be. And so in that situation, we can either put forth more honest effort or accept the consequences of our current effort. Now, the third thing that I want us to see here in Numbers 20 is that, and this one's really easy to see, but I want to make sure we don't look over this. It's that God punished Moses for his sin. God told Moses that he would never get to enter the promised land. And this was probably Moses' lifelong goal. After all, he had been leading these people since slavery in Egypt, and he was looking forward to bringing them to that land. And now, because he did this, because he struck the rock instead of speaking to it, he would never get to enter the land or lead them in. But I want to be really clear about something here. We might make the mistake of thinking that this is just a small mistake from Moses and a harsh punishment from God. But that's not the case. This was not a small mistake, and this was not a harsh punishment, undeserved. This was sin, and it was defiance, outright rebellion against God, and in front of the whole nation of Israel too. And ironically, he had just called the people rebels. He said, "Listen now, you rebels," and then he rebelled against God, and he did it in front of all of them. And remember, he's also their leader. He's the one who they all look up to as an example. So he has great influence over these people, and he just defied God in front of all of them. And so if God wouldn't have punished Moses in this way, then the whole nation might have thought they could just do whatever they want. They don't have to listen to what God says. They don't have to obey his commands carefully, because after all, Moses got away with it. So God makes sure to punish Moses for this sin, and in a way that everyone can see. And so Moses, in Deuteronomy 34, dies up on top of Mount Nebo, looking into the land, but he never gets to enter it. He never gets to go in. God followed through with that punishment. And what we need to see for ourselves is that one sin can lead to major consequences in our lives. That's all it takes sometimes. drinking too much alcohol, for example, that can have terrible consequences. If someone drinks and gets behind the wheel, that leads to so many terrible consequences every day in the United States. I did a little bit of research on this, and on cdc.gov, they report that 29 people just in the United States die every day in a car accident related to someone driving while intoxicated. That's equivalent to one person every 50 minutes. That's less than an hour. And so many people suffer the loss of their lives or the lives of their family members because of this one sin. Mothers, fathers, and children lose their family members every day to this tragic reality. And it all comes from one sin. And on top of that, drinking too much it leads to loss of control in general. People say things they normally wouldn't say. They do things they normally wouldn't do. And that can just lead to more and more sins as a result of this one particular sin, which can lead to more and more consequences. You see how this just adds up? From just one sin, so many terrible things can come out of it. We choose when we go in, but we don't choose when we get out. And even if things are made right before God, the consequences will still be real. They don't just go away, and sometimes they have lasting effects. We just can't undo what's been done. And if someone is hurt or killed or any other terrible consequence, we have to deal with that and we have to live with it. Sometimes for the rest of our lives, we have to live with that consequence. So I think I can safely say how abundantly clear it is that God takes obedience seriously. But I would hate for anyone to leave here this morning hopelessly depressed about past sins. Yes, we need to obey God very carefully. But the same God who takes obedience seriously also takes restoration seriously. And so we can still have hope that God will restore us if we obey him again after we sin. And this is why Moses never gave up hope. If we go on, we see Moses living out a faithful life. And this is because Moses trusted in God to save him, to restore him, despite his failures, despite his sin. If we look at Deuteronomy 32, we see that Moses would have had to have understood this because he taught the people of Israel the Song of Moses that God told him to teach them. And it's essentially a summary of how God deals with his people. God blesses Israel, and then Israel rejects God. And so then God punishes Israel, but in the end, God restores his people from the nations that he gives them to. He avenges them. And so Moses had faith that like God does this for his people, for Israel, he would do the same for him. Moses had faith that God would restore him, even after death. That's what we see when we look at Deuteronomy 34. We see Moses climbing up on that mountain, knowing that he's going to die there without entering the land of Canaan. And I'm sure that was still really difficult for him to do that, to make that climb, but he did that with faith, because ultimately Moses was waiting for the heavenly land, the eternal land, not the temporary land of Canaan. Look over with me in Hebrews chapter 11. In Hebrews chapter 11, we see something really important. In verse 13, that's Hebrews 11, 13. All these died in faith without receiving the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance, and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own. And indeed, if they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. And then dropping down to the very end of the chapter, verses 39 and 40. And this is after Moses is talked about, among others, in this, what we usually refer to as the Hall of Faith. In verse 39, "And all these, having gained approval through their faith, did not receive what was promised, because God had provided something better for us, so that apart from us, they would not be made perfect." You see, Moses may not have gotten to enter the land of Canaan, but similarly, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they didn't get to inhabit the land. Now, they may have gotten to go into the land, and we know Abraham, he was a sojourner in there for a while, but they didn't permanently possess it. But Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Moses, they all kept their faith because they knew something better was coming. They knew that heaven was waiting for them. Maybe they didn't know all what that entailed, but neither do we, really. And they had faith that that was coming, and that's what they were looking forward to, not this land of Canaan, because they would either die outside of the land or inside of the land. Either way, death was coming, and so they were looking to something better. And in the end, Moses is remembered for his faith, not his sin at the rock. Look at that same chapter, Hebrews 11, in verse 24. These are some of the things that Moses is remembered for. His sin isn't even mentioned here. None of his sins are. "By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. And by faith he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is unseen. By faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood, so that he who destroyed the firstborn would not touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea, as though they were passing through dry land, and the Egyptians, when they attempted it, were drowned." And ironically, the same is true of the end of Deuteronomy 34. Turn over to Deuteronomy 34, that same chapter where Moses has just faced the consequences of his sin at the rock. He's just died up on that mountain, not getting to enter the land. But look at what is said of him right after that. In Deuteronomy 34, in verse 10, "Since that time, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. For all the signs and wonders which the Lord sent him to perform in all the land of Egypt against Pharaoh, all his servants, and all his land, for all the mighty power and for all the great terror which Moses performed in the sight of all Israel." See, he's remembered as a faithful prophet of God, one who does these signs and wonders, acts of obedience. He's not remembered for his sin at the rock or any of his other sins, because God restores us if we obey him again. And that's what we need to see for ourselves, that we can always have hope in God, and we should always have hope in God if we obey him again. No matter what sins we have committed or even will commit, God will have mercy on us if we remain faithful in the long run. That doesn't mean the consequences will go away. Sometimes they won't. But it does mean that God will not give up on us. So no matter what the consequences are that we may have to face here in this life on earth, heaven will be waiting for us if we remain faithful to death, if we obey again. And so the best thing we can do next after we sin, and really the only thing that we should do next after we sin, is to continue to obey God again. This doesn't excuse the sin, but it does lead to restoration. And so, looking at the life of Moses, we can see that we should always have hope in God to bring us into the heavenly land, to restore us, if we obey him again after sinning. But still not forget that we need to be careful to obey everything that God commands in the first place. After Moses finishes teaching Israel the Song of Moses in Deuteronomy 32, ending with restoration for Israel, He says something in verses 46 and 47 of Deuteronomy 32, almost as a reminder to the people. He says there, "Take to your heart all the words with which I'm warning you today, which you shall command your sons to observe carefully." And there's one of our words, carefully, right there. "Even all the words of this law, for it is not an idle word for you. Indeed, it is your life." And when Moses said this, "It is your life," he meant it in the fullest sense possible. And we need to treat obedience just like he did, and really just like God does. We need to obey God carefully. So wherever we find ourselves, whether we're right before God or we've just sinned, the answer is always to obey God. If you haven't been obeying God as carefully as you should, then we'd be more than happy to help you with that in whatever way we can this morning, to help you obey him again. Or if you haven't yet taken that first step in obedience by confessing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and being baptized for the forgiveness of your sins, then we're ready to help you with that too. Whatever your need is, please come forward right now as we stand and sing.